Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
It was only spinning, but I think it worked.
I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light. It split the night and touched the sound of silence, and in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one dare disturb the sound. Said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silent raindrops fell and echoed. People bowed and prayed to the neon god they made, and the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming, and the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls.
Hello, Hatter.
Are you muted?
Yeah, I'm mute. I've been talking away on my mute. Yeah, that's like Simon and Simon Garfunkel's Sound of Silence, a great poem put to music. We'll get into the meaning here in a minute. You have stumbled across A Team of Voices Radio. It's a Wonderland production. We are a group of writers that hang out allpoetry.com, or basically say we found each other. Poetry.com, and we broadcast our work 7 days a week, or most of the days of the week, on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Jay Hatter, the host for tonight, and with me is AP Taylor, the man from down under the snowy river, the Wizard of Oz. How are you, AP?
Hey, good, thanks, Hatter. How are you?
I'm okay. Day's winding down. Along with us also is the boss, my little sister, my friend, Deborah. How are you, Deb?
I'm okay. Glad to be here.
Did you notice
I'm
I didn't put
boss.
You to work?
Thought it
I, didn't,
was
I didn't have you lifted. I didn't have you lifted heavy stuff in the back tonight. So, yeah, tonight I figured what we'll do is spend an hour or so, and we'll talk about poetry and why. Why is there poetry? Where did it come from? What the evolution of? And who are poets around us? I would like to say, until you try doing it, you might be surprised how difficult it can be. Myself, when I came to allpoetry.com, and it is free to join if you'd like to join. Just come in and find a team of voices. Knock on the door, Deb will let you in. You can share your work or just hang out with us. But through the last 8 years that I've been part of All Poetry, I went to better myself in learning to write. I wanted to write songs. But in order to write songs, you better be a good poet. So that's how it started. And what I found was other people with the same desires and who were, I consider, a lot better writers than I was by far. And that inspired me to want to become a better writer. And I think in the last 8 years, I have become a better writer, as everybody around me also. It's amazing to see how the evolution of these people's talent. Let's see, we've had the radio for, what, 4 years now, Deb? Radio going? Or is it five?
Our fourth anniversary is in March.
Okay, fourth anniversary, cool. And that's just about, I've known A.P. Taylor and Deborah a few years longer than that. So about 6 years. And it's been, it's been enlightening. People from around different parts of the world write different ways. AP, way he writes and his form structure of poetry, just fascinates the hell out of me. My mind ties up in knots when I try to do it. Deborah, she's the classic. Let me win the big contest each year. The Winter Park write out or paid out. An event that happens every year, and a bunch of painters in Florida post their paintings, and we take the paintings, choose, and we write to what we see in the picture, and they post them together, I guess. Is that right, Deb? They now posted them together when judged?
And then the artists and anyone participating in the Winter Park paint-out can peruse the poems that were written to the art, and you never know, you might write a poem that resonates with someone so deeply that they buy a painting, and it's for a good cause. So.
Now I know there's what's usually the how many poems are put in each year, because I know there sometimes the judges are split up to three different judges to narrow them down to a finalist, so there must be hundreds of them each year. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the year I won gold, I think there was almost 300, and then it just varies. There was a lapse with COVID, like everything else in the world, and then it drifted off some, but there's always more than 100. And there's Mark, who hosts it, and he judges. And then there's three guest hosts, which I got to be one on the one they just did. And then there is whomever the poet laureate is also invited. And then what he does is he has each of us, he assigns us a fourth of the list, and then we pick X amount, however many he asks us to, and then we forward those choices by those four judges to the poet laureate, and the poet laureate makes final decisions from the list of stuff that we had chose. So it's a group effort, and we get the sponsors.
Yeah,
in April, it'll be our fourth time sponsoring it.
Oh, in April? Okay. Okay, some back to normalcy a bit. Being a poet, we don't make anything except respect and camaraderie with the other writers. We can basically understand each other's struggles as we write. There are different reasons for everybody that to end up at the same place. Some is heartbreak. Some is a tragedy of the family. Some is being lost or lonely. Or some just want to realize it's
all
a great
the above.
Way to, or all the above. Yeah. but no matter how it happened, we all ended up at the same place at the same time, which in itself is quite a miracle if you think about it. I get back to Simon and Garfunkel. Before I forget, Simon and Garfunkel, The Sound of Silence, I consider is the premier poem to music lyrics in the history of music. I just love it. There's meaning behind The Sound of Silence. At first, it should be noted that The Sound of Silence, it's not a good thing. It's indicative to people being unable to effectively communicate with each other, particularly on the emotional level. The implication is presented that these people are not cognizant of such an such effect even exists, or rather the reason The Sound of Silence is so strong is because people deem it to be more important than its after effect. Now, the song warns about the dangers of social isolationism. Okay, and it is in that regard, it has been theorized that Simon and Garfunkel are issuing a warning against the threat of my screen jumped. Sorry, the warning of such events in the mid 20th century. In other words, a form of media which may have been deemed as propagating introversive behavior back in those days was the TV. And as such, it is feasibly that the neon light referred to in the song is in fact an illusion TV set or something of that sort. Now, this meaning, this definition of the song is not written by Paul Simon, nor is it written by Art Garfunkel. So I'm going to give it a grain of salt. This is an interpretation. Some people thought it was a war, anti-war song, basically because that's the time it came out was the Vietnam War. Now, Paul Simon was very strongly opposed to being it known as an anti-war. He did not want it to become that, mainly because you don't want to be put in that category as government could turn on you. If you become that's the reason John Lennon was not allowed back in the United States was that same kind of a feeling. Let's see, they did mention the final verse that perhaps is the most evidence that the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. It's a matter of fact, metaphorical in the fact the common idea of people worshiping a neon god. Now, I can't think of anything other than the TV or what they would call what is it when you live somebody else's, you're watching voyeuristic tendencies to be somebody else through their life. It's a dangerous thing. It's something that the man has been warned about. Don't travel down that road. Find your own existence. Find who you are. Don't live on from the TV. That's what when you idolize musicians, in fact, is a form of that. It's something you don't want to get stuck in. There's nothing positive, basically, that comes out of it for yourself. What I just said, would you agree, AP? Basically, feel free to step in any time.
Sure, sort of your thought, Hatter. But I think for me, what you said before is interesting in that you know people, you know, I think that there's an initial thought that it's easy to get the written word out onto a page, and I think what we've all discovered is that it's a lot harder than what you first think. And it's relatively easy to get something written down, and it's a lot harder to actually get something that you're really happy with and that, you know, you think represents what you're trying to do. And, you know, you can understand how people take decades to actually get their craft together,
yeah.
Their poetry.
And I think it's common that as writers or musicians are probably the worst of being their own worst critic. I know I...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and you have to sort of be able to step out of that and listen to people you trust and giving you critique on what to do. And there's nothing better than to write every day and around people that are doing the same thing. And whether you like it or not, you're going to pick up. I mean, you're not going to copy. You're not going to plagiarize. You're not going to do anything like that. But you are going to get better by the little nuances that another poet, another writer will use, and you consider that a good form for you to express your emotions. That's basically what poetry is, in English or in any language. It's, you know, I've always said, it used to be, and still is to a fact, men do not go around saying I'm a poet, I write poetry. It doesn't have that manly feel to it, but when you get by it and understand what it's like to try to do it, it's not easily done. It's not easy at all. And you have to, it's a labor of love. You have to love what you're doing. I used to write, and in my circumstance, I was writing very dark, metaphoric lines that, you know, could be interpreted in a number of ways, but it would always get, you know, always had a cover over the top of it. Through the experiences with the other poets, I've written some, my best stuff is not dark. It's emotional, but...
Your best stuff's not dark, Heather. I sort of thought I wrote a little bit dark until I went to a dark poetry competition once on the site, and then I realised that, you know, even my username wasn't appropriate to be dark. You know, there's all these Megadeth and Super Vortex whatever and, you know, Massive Explosion and horror and, you know, I just, you know, I was so far away from writing dark.
I remember the night I first heard you read on the radio. You had called into Gressman's show.
Yes.
And through the next couple of weeks after meeting you, we had, I think it was Halloween. We were approaching Halloween about the same time of year it is now. And you wrote something dark.
Yes.
And it was, the words were there. It was well written. But you, as a radio personality, a voice, I didn't buy it. I told you so then, and I hope you didn't take offense then.
Yeah.
And you didn't. But you just, your personality just doesn't. In fact, I think the first thing I said is, I don't buy it. You just, it's a great poem, but the voice is just too. It's a good thing.
It's really interesting. You hear certain voices and they sound dark. And a great example of that was our friend Robert M, who you know, opened his mouth and spoke, and immediately thought, oh shit, this is going to be dark, you know. It's just one of those things, you know.
The voice, the radio is a good medium that we've all incorporated in our writing, put voices and personalities to the work rather than just reading it cold, you know, somebody reading it for you and just contest. And it's a huge benefit to our creativeness and being able to learn from each other. This radio gig is a great way to not only meet each other a little more, but personalize where they're coming from, and, you know,
yeah, look,
in their rights.
I think that's right, Tata. And look, everybody forks a different path, of course, but I actually think it helps as a rider to walk a path with others. And that's just a, you know, something I've found along the way. And as I said, everybody's different. And, you know, some people find it really useful to go and do workshops on this thing and that sort of stuff. But, you know, that's not me, but it is for some people. And some people like myself are just right. And everybody's following a different path. You know.
Yeah, I think everybody sort of finds their way.
Yeah.
When you first start writing, you don't know what is your niche. You feels best to write, but it might not be what you're best at. And I think the different contests, the different prompts that the host uses on the radio shows or the contests any place on allpoetry.com. Does nothing but excite your imagination and you just become better. Anything you do every day, you're gonna get better at it. It's just the way it is.
I agree, Adam. I agree. I think it's sort of feels sometimes strange because you never when you're going through it, it doesn't feel like you're necessarily getting better, because you'll do a poem and then you do a really good poem and then something will happen and you won't do a good poem, you know, and you think going backwards, but you're not. I'm very much of the belief that every poem that you write, it takes you further on your sort of writing journey. It's just that you may not sort of realize it at the time.
Yeah, I think that's, like you said, it's something that you won't notice in yourself as much as you would somebody else, being that you are your own worst critic and you can see the something you're not happy with, you know, somewhere in it, one verse, one line, whatever. But you learn to... You don't want it to be something where you obsess over it. I mean, at one time, I wouldn't post anything until I felt it was perfect, and that was the wrong thing to do.
Yes,
there are some of the
but
you got
to
learn.
It's very common, Hatter, to have that to, and I think it's something you have when you first start. Yeah, you look at something, you criticize yourself, and then you sort of think, oh shit, you know, but. The truth of the matter is that, you oftentimes are a lot better than what you give yourself credit for, and oftentimes the improvements that you have are incremental, and you can't see it in every poem, but if you look back 3 or 6 months, you do notice it, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of times... It has happened to me. It doesn't happen to me as much as it did back in the day when I was learning and learning from other people around me. I would pick up something I wrote the day before and read it and wonder, how in the hell did I write that?
Yeah.
It's usually it's the first time that you impress yourself with the struggle of writing. The way I wrote used to be exhausting. I was exhausted. The way I went about getting my mindset into, now I'm a rhymer, classic rhymer, so there's a different struggle inside to make sure you're happy with it. You don't want forced rhyming. It is very evident. You don't want cliches if you can't, don't have to use them. You don't want the reader tripping on anything. You want it smooth because that's the only way they're going to remember something from your poem and what they're going to take away. Another part of it is learn brevity, learn how to not be redundant in how you're saying things in different words. You could have stanzas back-to-back means the same thing. You just said it different. You have to realize what is good, you and the poem, and what is grainy. You have a 20-stanza poem. Readers tend to get a little bored at it unless you have a strong masterpiece of a storyline that they can't wait to see how it ends, which good luck finding that one. I think it's in every one of us.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree, Hatter, and I think it's got even worse in the day of an age of Twitter, you know, where you've only got 256 characters, and so, you know, I think the amount of patience people has got is a lot less than what it was back, you know, 20, 30 years ago. You know, I think there's a real, you know, thing to, well, let's get in, let's get out, let's get this thing done, you know. Even relatively short, people get tired of.
Now, I actually looked, I mean, Googled this line, how to become a better,
yes.
And just to see different, and like you'll have professors of literature, you'll have known poetic authors that'll give their two cents on what how to become better. The number one constant that I saw was do not post anything or as a final the same day you wrote it. Come back hours later, if not the next day, and reread it, because you'll find something in there that you don't see that you'll change. Now, with us at All Poetry, who reads your stuff when you post it? Your best friends, your friends you've made, other poets that you respect and want to impress. So you want your best out there. To post something and then change it later, you can't go back and go, hey, reread this, I changed it. You want to be sure that this is my own outlook, but this is the constant that most of the people say to become a good poet. Don't throw anything up there that you're not happy with.
Absolutely.
And that's that second guessing. I am terrible at the final edit. I've had things that self implode, just lost it all. When I thought I had something good to work with, and just the final edit. So you got to be careful of that. Your mindset the next day could be different from where you were feeling that the night before. Mine is tense. I have a big problem with keeping the tense right. I work so hard at cadence. Yeah. And rhyme, my tense will fall out all over the place. I've been told that, so I try to keep it together in that form. Anyway, now let's talk. Since we're here talking about poetry, let's talk free verse and rhyming verse. Now, I asked AP Taylor, my friend here, years ago. I asked you. Or I told you how disappointed and sort of frustrated I was when I first got to All Poetry, being that everybody was free verse. And their attitude was rhyme is passe, rhyme has all been done. It's all been said.
Yes.
Can't impress them, rhyme. And that just sort of broke my heart. So I asked AP Taylor, could this be a cycle thing, like fashion or...
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of other things, like television shows, westerns to war shows, classic rotation cycle of how things, how people perceive what they do. Now, you told me, which is probably the only reason I'm still here, is that you agreed that it's probably, it'll come back around where rhyming is more popular than free verse. I get frustrated at the definition of free verse because they'll say, write anything anyway, that's free verse. And I disagree. If you're going in a poetic, if you're going to sell that as a poetic verse, and you're going to approach, the reader's going to approach it as a poetic write, there is something, whatever it is, you need to do to make it flow, to make it easy to hear.
Low cadence to the rest. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's one. That'll be one of the hurdles you'll go through just becoming better and better. You'll have to fight that demon when it comes to you. I have maybe 10. No, probably not even 10 free verse in my vault of 1,000 plus. Right, so there's very few free verse. I stuck to my guns being that my friend AP Taylor said it's going to be, it'll cycle back around.
Come back.
And I think maybe it's doing it a little better. It's doing that more. People are more apt to writing rhyme.
Yes.
Would you agree, Deborah?
You know, I think that it's a really tough one because there's, personally, even if I write free verse, if I go back and look at it later, it drives me crazy, and somehow I wind up finding a way to turn it into a rhyme. I think, but then there are people who knock my socks off with their free verse. I just, well, you already said earlier, we're our own worst critics, and personally, I think some of my stuff's better when I rhyme. I'm a tough one to ask because I write by mood, and sometimes it does just pour out on the page and you're done, and then you look at it and you're like, oh, wow, it didn't rhyme. So I do have more than 10 that are free verse. I don't know. I think because of the daily writing, the trying to tailor the work to the particular host of the contest or the show that I'm writing for, if that's a free verse person, then I give it a go because you also touched on the fact that you're trying to impress your friends. And if my friend is a free verse person, no matter how good I get it, a particular rhyme, it's not going to impress them as much as what they see a poem as. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, a poem that sits down and it's rhythmic and it's the rhyme, the flow, the feel, all of it is like this total package. And I came here to all poetry with the headset that poems should rhyme. Now I see that that's not true. It's just a personal preference, and that a masterpiece is a masterpiece, whether it's free verse rhyme, watercolor, oil paint. It's just we're back to interpretation and how it touches you. I do everything. I follow my heart always. So it doesn't have to rhyme to touch me. It just has to touch me, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. When I would enter a free verse contest, which I had, and this is how bad my mind works. I had written a piece, free verse, that I won a medal for. But to make the world right, I had to go back and rewrite it to make it rhyme. Just because something was off of my head. That was just, it sounds stupid, but
I've done that too.
But
then there are some that I won't go back and change because, and here's an example of what I was just saying about writing for my host. I was just in a contest by Rolling Stone, and I got an HM, and that blows my mind. And I tried to respond. He put up some of his poems as the prompt, and I tried to respond to one, and his poem was free verse, so I had at it. And it's my second highest poem. He doesn't like pictures, so I will never add a picture to it, and I won't turn it into rhyme because it was written specifically for him, you know? But if I just wrote it trying to do free verse, I would have right away, like you just said, it would have drove me nuts, and I would have had to go back and fix it. And it's not really fixing it, but in my brain it is because it's got to rhyme now.
I had come across a group, and I won't mention any names because I'm not putting anybody down or anything, just the frustration of being a rhyming poet. One of my most critical comments was what I got from entering this contest. Now, wasn't it could be any yeah. form. It didn't say free verse to rhyme, but I wrote a rhyming poem. The comments I got from some of these people in the group was how I first learned on how people looked at rhyming poets or poetry. It didn't anger me. It didn't make me mad. It was just I didn't understand. So, yeah. And I knew the piece that I put in, I was very proud of, and I thought it was very good, but it didn't make them grade. So I made it my mission that I am going to medal one of these contests from this group, whether they like it or not. So I kept entering and writing and writing, and one day I got silver. It was something that was good enough and got great praise for it. That I don't suggest anybody do that because you get the as long as if you're very comfortable with who you are as a poet, then you can take your skin is not thin to where you could be hurt. Go ahead, try that, make a point. But always approach poetry and writing with a positive, not a negative. If you go in with a negative, I don't think probably masterpiece won't come out to you. You know that contest. All in all, though, the people I've met and the writers are all great. It's amazing sometimes when we first saw Gerald Green, for example, his writing and the way he approaches it, the way he writes, the hooks he puts in them at the end, and the surprises sometimes just is amazing. He's a very good writer, and I am impressed, and I learned something from him. There are a number of other poets too. Rima was another friend, and if you listen to him, the way he talks to you on the radio, you would not in any shape or form realize that this is the guy that wrote poems and the way he writes, because they are fantastically put together. They are long line rhyme poems. When he does, he even does the run-on sentence, which is basically a good form for the free verse, and he'll rhyme it. It'll rhyme to the next run-on sentence, and it's like, that's beautifully done. So I'm constantly impressed that I've even added it to my tools of how I write. I use that. The long line rhyme, I always have that in my head because it can always shorten up. In fact, whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, I can start off long line. It'll end up shorter. The lines will end up shorter by the time I end. I don't know what that is, but it's just a fact. And you guys, AP Taylor and Deborah, two of my best friends here in the poetry world, you guys would tell me honestly when something's wrong with something, and I totally understand. I totally appreciate that. There are a lot of times you just don't see it. You don't see it. Over and over you'll read it thinking there's something wrong, but you don't see it until somebody points it out. And you're sort of amazed you can. But I even asked, okay, where did poetry start? Who wrote the first poems and why were they written? When I guessed, now, the poet, the storyteller back in the day, that was the internet. That was the guy that, before there were written books, the jester, the storyteller, the poet would entertain royalty and had a place, a high place in the social structure. Donovan, in the beginning of his song Aquarius, he does a talking sort of a soliloquy type of intro where he says, gathered will be the poet, I mean the scientist, the mathematician, and the poet. The poet's always listed as an important part of saving a society. Who do you want to teach? Or who do you want to look up to make the laws or to make the decisions? The poet's always listed and always sort of amazed me why, but that's basically it. There was a if you wanted to know about things, you went to the poet. not the mathematician. So so I looked up basically what was the first poetry. Who were the first poets? As a written text, the epic poem about King Gilgamesh dates back about 1000 BC. The ancient Greeks and Romans between 1200 BC and 4455 AD were all also known for their great epic poetry. Now, AP and I, we haven't got this done yet, but we were going to write our classic to sort of put our, how did we put it? If we were to have a contest of the Iliad by Homer, we needed a classic to represent our generation, for lack of a better word, to enter in. Now, it does say the Homer and his right, the Iliad and the Odyssey, and Hesiod, who wrote the Works and Days, we consider the two first poets. And then let's see, the modernist movement of the early 1900s was the best, was in a way fighting back against the idea that poetry should be elegant and beautiful. Poems became shorter and more concise. A much simpler, less ornate style was preferred. Some famous modernist poets included W.B. Yeats, and Robert Frost, and W.H. Auden. Now, the different types of poetry, this is where it gets, where you find your niche. If you hang around, come to all poetry, and you hang around, introduce yourself or become friends with some of the other writers, you'll be introduced to different styles, different forms, form poetry. The ancient Greeks loved their epic poetry and produced great works that we are still fascinated by, such as Homer's Iliad and Odyssey. Another genre is dramatic poetry. If you've ever read a play by William Shakespeare, you're reading dramatic poetry. Basically, dramatic poetry is written with the intention of being performed. Interesting. It says, I'm reading this a couple of places. It says, the human brain is hardwired for poetry, and I agree with that. The reason that poetry first started with the storytellers was to make it rhyme, was to remember. It was a way of chronologically writing facts down to remember one after the other because of the ending rhyming line. One reason poetry has such a potent effect upon us is that our brains seem to be wired to recognize it. In one newly published study in the journal Frontiers of Psychology, researchers at the UK's Bangor University read an assortment of sentences to a group of Welsh-speaking subjects. Some of the sentences conformed to the intricate poetry structure rules of a traditional form. Well, those can be used in poetry as well. I'm assuming the ones the students recognized and remembered the rhyming lines as further on, which makes sense. That's why I've always considered your first line and the way you end a poem is the strongest. The end is basically what they're going to take away. You don't want to just sort of fade away. You want that hook or that dramatic make her cry line, you know. Your first lines, what's going to grab and keep the reader reading your stuff? If you don't grab them right off the bat with this first line or two, you'll probably lose them. They won't be impressed. It's easy to lose a reader even in metaphorically, you can be too strong metaphorically sometimes. Well, I don't know what he means. What does he mean by that? What I've learned, and this is my own, and I'm not trying to teach anybody a certain way, but in my own travels as a poet, The the metaphor, the metaphors you use in it, if you use a strong metaphoric line, if you can draw the reader back to what sort of an explanation to finish that thought, he can basically understand the metaphors you're using a little better. I knew this, I had met this artist who was also a poet who lived in, I think she lived in France, and I had her do some art, draw some artwork for me, then delivered it to England. But she wrote these beautiful lines, but they were, they're just just one metaphor after another. They're just beautiful lines, but there was no story in it. There was, it's like, that's all she did, and she did it very well. I didn't know her enough to have any kind of criticism for her to be talking to her that way, but I noticed it, and she was very popular, very well known for her ability to create these beautiful lines one after the other, but it lacked the story. This, what did it mean when you, what did you take away from it? So if you didn't bring the reader back out of the metaphors to make sense of what you said, I think it's lacking what a good poem needs to have. Would you agree with that, AP?
Yeah, I think so, Hatter. I mean, I think you get different. You get better at using metaphors the more you use them, and I think the interesting thing for me has been that, you know, I'm writing a novel at the minute, and so, you know, being in novel writing sort of form is different from being in poetry writing form. The metaphors are similar, but you're actually trying to provide more links and detail and richness in the story, because obviously you want somebody to be reading it for a couple of hundred pages, and so there's got to be a degree of intersection in the metaphors that makes sense and is internally consistent. The great thing about poetry for me is that you can rattle a few metaphors off, and as long as they're vaguely associated with each other, you can get away with it. In a novel, you can't do that. It's got to be, you know, everything's got to be internally consistent with the characters that you're trying to build.
Yeah, and in poetry, it is a puzzle. It's a puzzle of words. If you piece it together right, and it is all about, you can have three poets all say the same thing different ways, and only one of them will actually not be right, but one of them will be more powerful than the others. But they'll say the same thing, the same type of words. So it's the words you use. And I don't know which the subject or your verbiage or adverbs or what is more powerful for a memory, for somebody to remember or to take away. I don't know what that formula is, but when you do, you know, when it does work, you tend to know it. I think I know where my best, better rights are. And it amazes me sometimes when people come and tell me what they took from it after reading it or after hearing me read it, and that's that warm fuzzy feeling that keeps us all writing.
Yeah,
for another
absolutely.
Day, you know. Let's see. Okay, yeah, we're talking about metaphors. One of the most popular literary devices used in many poems is symbolism. Or when one thing is used to represent another. For example, Robert Frost's famous poem, The Road Not Taken, describes two different paths in the woods. The fork in the road, right? Choices that every human makes, some more than others. Some bear weight from it. Some take the turn without realizing they did. I didn't even see that fork in the road. I should have known. I lost that whole page now. Okay. But modern day poets, how do you say that? A laureate?
Poet laureate, yes.
How do you become a laureate? Who decides that you're Now, do you take a test?
That is a very interesting question, Hatter. Yeah. Because there are many poet laureates and not many of them are viewed as being great successes.
Say that one more time. I just broke.
There are many poet laureates that have been been placed and awarded, but not many of them are considered to be great successes. And do you realise that Australia only ever had one poet laureate?
Banjo?
No. Well before Banjo. No. In 1818, Governor Lachlan Macquarie went and nominated Michael Massey Robinson, Australian Poet Laureate, and he was so goddamn awful that we haven't had one since.
Oh, is that right? Is that a yearly thing? Is that like you represent for a year, or are you always considered?
He represented Australia as Poet Laureate for, I think, 2 years. From memory, 1819 and 1820, he was a convict, and he was a very, very ordinary poet.
You know, I didn't understand what the word meant, what it entailed. What was it by being knighted as a by the queen, or, you know, how, what it all entailed. So I looked up the modern day poets, which considered best poet and the poet laureate.
Yes.
I was very disappointed what I had read. The one I had read was basically all about racism, but as far as structure and what I took away from it, I thought it lacked a lot in poetry. I that's my own feelings. I'm not going to name any names in that what year it was, but I still didn't understand who gives you that title. How do you do you wear a sash over your shoulder?
You get the title and you get some money. In Robinson's particular case, he actually was paid in cows, had a.
Oh, okay.
He didn't get
there
money.
There is a title. Okay.
He got cows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he unfortunately was a very good convict, a very good fraudster, and not such a great poet.
Well, I'm assuming rhyming, right?
Well, he was, but, you know, it really takes some doing to actually get transported out to England, to Australia, you know, as a convict. Yes, he got that first.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when he was out here, he went and perjured himself to the extent that he actually got sent to Norfolk Island as a convict. So he got sent to Australia as a convict, went and said all these horrible things, and then got shipped off to a tiny little island in the middle of nowhere, Norfolk Island. So that takes a particular skill.
Well, that would draw emotions out of you, wouldn't it? I mean,
you'd
walk that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It is quite remarkable to learn where the poet came from. Was it a struggle? Was it a struggle for him in life, or him or her, or was it a silver spoon?
In this particular case, it was a political appointment, Hatter, and I suspect probably lots of artistic appointments are. So this was a political appointment in 1818. But I think there's much to be said for letting the people decide, and actually, if a poet goes and sells a whole heap of stuff, then you can become a poet laureate from there. You know, that's my view.
Yeah, I've took some time and sort of read up on the evolution and how the genesis and the evolution of poetry. It all starts with Homer. And
yes.
It basically, describes social structure and social unrest. A lot of poetry. Isn't your hallmark card type of poetry, which we have some in our group that are phenomenal. I call them our hallmarks, and that's a compliment. I can't write that way. Well, I guess I can. I just don't.
You choose not to.
I wouldn't be as good. But the content and the meaning of a poem, what they take away. When I did the metaphors, I was always asked, what do you mean by that? What does that mean? And then my answer was, what did you take from it? Because that's what it means, is what you take away. Some people got that. Some people don't. It's a lousy answer to a great question. But I didn't have an answer because it wasn't going to – the way I wrote it, with the words that I chose, was not going to be anywhere near probably what you're thinking, you know, as a reader.
Yeah.
So it says each can be used – let's see, the poetry – well, the metaphors. Each can be used by the poet to change the content and the meaning of the poem. One of the most popular literary devices used in many poems is symbolism. But back to Sound of Silence by Simon Garfunkel, the neon god they made. That's a powerful line. comes at the last verse of the song. Let's see, origins of royalty. It's a type of poetry that came after the epic, I believe the epic poetry. A team of orange throwers await to the next team of carriages to arrive in Ivrea, Italy. Carnival's famous orange battles originated from the town's medieval heritage, which feudal lords would hand out food to the poor who reputedly threw it back as a gesture of disrespect. The concept of royalty is centuries old. And that was the main social interaction into poetry, was your happiness or unhappiness with your kingdom, your kings, your leaders.
Yes.
Now, there's narrative poetry. It's poetry that tells a story. This is what I could say sometimes when it's moving, something that moves you or touches you deeply. It's usually a narrative poem. It's just like the literary narrative. There's a plot or some sort of action taking place. One popular type of narrative poetry is epic poetry. We hit on that. Epic poetry is a long narrative poem that usually follows the life and adventures of a hero. The ancient Greeks loved their poetry, epic poetry, and we hit on that earlier. Since poetry is essentially a form of creative writing, it uses some of the same tools found in other types of literature. Do you remember all of those literary devices from English class? Foreshadowing, irony, personification, and so on. With those to be used in poetry as well. So you can write about anything. That's what it's basically saying. And then again, if you are trying to write about a certain thing, your metaphors are better placed in critical spots so you can explain it somehow, what it means. And I wish I should have chosen a poem that has that example, because I think that's very important when you write a lot of metaphors. That's a great tool to be able to use. Your metaphors. It's just like your hook lines. I always use Poets and Paperbacks. That's a title, one I wrote years ago. But they're just Poets and Paperbacks. It sort of rolls off the tongue. So it's sort of a hook thing. If they didn't take anything out and they could remember anything, they probably would remember those words in it. Hook lines and songs. Musicians use it all the time. The pleasure you get out of writing something that pleases you outweighs the struggle and frustration of when you have writer's block. You can't write anything. You're having trouble getting anything on paper. It's all fueled into that one time where it just flows. When the rhyming gets too strong in my brain, I'll end up talking that way. And I got my roommate says, quit talking like that. Sorry. When it rhymes. And it's a good thing. When I'm having the writer's block, I'll tend to just write the hook lines, ideas. And then when I'm able to write, I'll bring those back out, and at least I'll have some fuel. I'll have some tools to use. So there's always something to do as a poet. Writing, you have writer's block, you don't want to ignore your passion, but you realize that you're having a struggle, so find a way. Mine is nostalgic music. I'll put on some 60s rock and roll, or some back in the day that brings me the nostalgia feelings, because a lot of it is experiences that we've all had, and we try to explain it the best way we can through the poetry. And when it's done right, I have to, every once in a while, I have to write something to make the girls cry. Right, Deb?
Absolutely. Marshmallow.
Yeah, marshmallow. Okay, we've done an hour. Do you want to continue, or you want to leave it here, or pick it up another night?
Whatever floats your boat, Hatter.
Well, it's all,
I thought
you
had
got
asked
time.
AP to choose a song at the beginning, though. AP, did you do that or no?
Well, I have a song, but we probably don't have it loaded yet.
You just read the lyrics at first.
Well, what's
the song?
Because my favorite
song is actually, it's Summer Highland Balls, Deb, by Billy Joel. And maybe I'll just read the words, Hatter. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, go for it.
So, okay. Well, this is, God knows I might even sing it. This is Summer Highland Balls by Billy Joel. I might as well try to sing it, I think.
Well, if you're going to sing, I don't need to go find it then, so that works.
Okay. So let's see how this goes. They say that these are not the best of times, but they're the only times I've ever known. And I believe there is time for meditation in cathedrals of our own. Now I have seen that sad surrender in my lover's eyes, and I can only stand apart and sympathize, for we are always what our situations hand us. It's either sadness or euphoria. So we'll argue and we'll compromise and realize that nothing's ever changed. For all our mutual experience, our separate conclusions are the same. Now we are forced to recognize our inhumanity. A reason coexists with our insanity. Though we choose between reality and madness, it's either sadness or euphoria. We dissipate our energies. Perhaps we'll fulfill each other's fantasies. And as we stand upon the ledges of our lives with our respective similarities, it's either sadness or euphoria. There you go, Adam.
Yeah, Billy Joel, right? Billy Joel, you said?
Billy Joel, yeah. From one of his early albums. I think it's Turnstiles. That's Summer Highland Falls. They say these are not the best times, they're the only times I've ever known. We are always when our situations handle us, it's either sadness or euphoria. It's just lovely lyrics, beautifully written.
Yeah. Deb, did you have one also?
Well, Hunter, my problem is that, as far as I'm concerned, all the songs are poetic, and I just got going up and down the studio the entire time, and no matter which one I look at, you know, you could read the lyrics. I mean, there's the obvious ones, like I think you mentioned Stairway to Heaven, and then we've got American Pie, and I mean, yes, all those. There's tons of Doors songs. Jim Morrison has poetry books that he published, so I just decided that it would be fun to listen to Elton John as we were leaving, your song, and you know, because it's a great song. So I'm just waiting for you to be done, and I'll play Elton John.
Okay. I went to my vault and picked one that you guys know most all my poetry and the ones that get read the most. This is one that isn't, that I think fills that what we were talking about of keeping the reader knowing what you're meaning. It's not long. It's called Time Never Promised Me a Thing. And it goes like this. I took a moment to pick a year, something to tell me how I got here. The days of golden apple wine poured too easy, so we could find the time of those moving days that knocked me down, still turns my dreams upside down. Shake it out to curt my view, I thought I saw what looked like you. Remember when you held my hand, you whispered so I might understand. I ran to where I used to walk, gathered in pieces my most shattered dreams, because forever was never an eternity, and time never promised me a thing. It was all built around that last line. Time never promised me a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, live your life as gracefully as you can, because the time will turn on you, or it can be your friend. One or the other. So, I think somehow we'll have to. The first 10 poems of any AP poet that's been here for a while. Pick maybe the first three and the last three. And look at the difference of how they write. It's an interesting concept. I think we'll go ahead and we're just over an hour here. We can hit this again on. I'd like to get next time we'll hit on a form. The evil forms of poetry, as you know it. I struggle with form poetry because I am a rhymer. It ties my brain in knots. But I should do it more. I want to thank AP Taylor. AP Taylor, thank you so much for hanging out with me and Deborah. Thank you. Always nice spending the evening with you. And
that got you, Hunter.
And for those that might run across this in a on-demand show, you have anything to add to us, find us on allpoetry.com. Deborah Lee, J. Hatter, or are you going by AP Taylor? Is that what it is? Or Con Range?
Yep.
And you can find us there if you have anything to, if you have any questions. We'd love to hear. You know, I didn't even give the phone number. If you would like to join us in talk chat next time, phone number, if you want to copy it down, 646-1-646-668-2837. That's 1-646-668-2837. And we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Thank you, guys. Down the road, let's see what we got. This is Wednesday night. We have Saturday night. It will be we'll get together again for Saturday. B.A.P. Taylor, Deborah, and myself with the prompt of Ashes, and we have a collaboration of lines that A.P. Taylor and I give to Deborah. She puts it together as a poem. Some of them are quite remarkable. So join us. That's 11 Eastern, 11 o'clock Saturday. And Deb, you want to hit on anything else coming up?
Yeah, well, for one, if you would like to hear a collaboration, you're just going to have to send me some lines. But yeah, I did want to say that at the moment, tomorrow night is scheduled with Pretty Bird, and she plans to go live at 10 p.m., and the topic is Hide the Truth, H-Y-D-E, like as in Dr. Jekyll and Mister. So check her out. And then on, Thursday.
I've written for that show, Deb,
I was going to say that I do see that you are on the board.
I'm there.
So that is cool. And I'm thinking that on Friday the 9th, it's got the wrong date on it. She's supposed to be Linda. So I will verify that. So for the moment, I will leave it here. And then, of course, Ashes. And then on Monday is the first time we do quotes by our fellow poet. And there are quotes by Heavenly Angel to choose from to go with the art on the board. So I'm hoping that goes very well. But,
One other thing, we always like to mention any of the musicians or artists or celebrities that pass, especially musicians. You mentioned earlier Loretta Lynn passed away?
Yes.
Did you say that?
I did. Tuesday.
So to the family of Loretta Lynn and fans, most respect from us. And hopefully we'll pick up and have a segment devoted to Loretta. Wow. If I remember right, that's the original, the farmers or the something daughter.
Coal miners.
What was the movie? Coal miner's
Coal
daughter.
Coal miner's daughter. Can't think of another song by her. I don't know if I know any others.
No.
I'm not a country genre person either, so I couldn't help you there.
It'd be hard to do a show.
As we've been talking, I've established that one of my favorite rap artists was coming to Australia, and so I've actually booked to go and see Kendrick Lamar in the first week of December, who's coming out to Melbourne, Australia. So Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar.
Okay. Cool.
So,
I'm pretty sure you don't know Kendrick Lamar.
No, I don't.
Great. Really.
Yeah.
But on that note, let's get out of here, guys. And
Okey-doke.
This is your song.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Adam.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no. Or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do.
My gift is my song, yeah. This one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down the words how wonderful life is while you're